Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
All right, let's give big ups to Geico for being a loyal sponsor of the Steve Austin Show. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you can be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at geico.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. Today I have an outstanding show for you that I think you're really going to dig. I'm talking to the one and only, greatest of all time, 16-time world champion, the greatest to ever lace up a pair of boots or step inside a squared circle, Nature Boy Ric Flair. We're shooting the breeze, talking about a little bit of our time in Tampa, catching up, talking about Harley Race stories, Hulk Hogan, covering just many different aspects of the business and some of Ric Flair's shenanigans and legendary stories from the road, the stories that only he can tell. Myself and many of my peers consider Ric to be the greatest world champion, traveling world champion of all time. And when I think pro wrestling, the first name that comes to my mind is Nature Boy Ric Flair. Anyway, I'm going to keep this open short because the conversation is about 90 minutes long. Before I get into the body of the show with Nature Boy Ric Flair, I want to thank everybody for watching Straight Up Steve Austin on USA Network. I hope you enjoyed my special guest, Sal Vulcano from Impractical Jokers. I had an absolute blast hanging out with that guy, and the show has been extremely well received thanks to your support. Each Monday, set your DVRs on the USA Network right after Monday Night Raw. And the show comes on at 11, 10 Central, 8 p.m. out here on the West Coast. Set your DVRs. I hope we do a good enough number that we can warrant season two of this show. I had an absolute blast. And I believe my guest next week is Cleveland Browns quarterback Baker Mayfield. And then the episode after that will be none other than the man, Becky Lynch. Please keep staying tuned. Please keep setting your DVRs. Now, without any further ado, here's my conversation with Nature Boy Ric Flair. When it comes to pain on a scale of 1 to 10, where are you at? After years of taking bumps in the ring, I've had my fill of aches and pains that still linger to this day. Most days are pretty good. Usually, I'm about a 1. But some days are rough, and it's those times when I just need some relief. Well, check it out. My guys at BioWave set me up with their BioWave Go device. This gimmick uses patented high-frequency neurostimulation pain-blocking technology that delivers therapeutic electrical signals through the skin into deep tissue right to the surface of pain fibers. Now, if you didn't catch all that, basically what I'm saying is that BioWave Go blocks that pain deep at the nerve for up to 24 hours from just one 30-minute treatment. This is different than the old-school TENS units as it goes above and beyond and the results last longer. I've been using my BioWave Go on my back, my neck, and a few other places, and I can tell you it is the real deal. BioWave Go is 100% drug-free pain relief. It's FDA cleared and currently used by most professional sport teams in the NFL, NHL, NBA, MLB, and NCAA programs. So give the Heisman stiff arm to all those smelly creams and other pain relief gimmicks. It's time to step it up and use what the pros use. Learn more at BioWaveGo.com. And if you're on board, and you should be, try BioWave Go with a no-risk 30-day money-back guarantee plus free shipping. Again, that's BioWaveGo.com, BioWaveGo.com. Check it out today and start living a fuller, pain-free life because I said so.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
I just want to say this to you. Getting a rug from you, whether I'm on your podcast or not, we charge $15 more for my autograph every time I'm on your show. I got the banker over here to the left.
Hey, Wendy, how are you?
She said, gosh, he's going to have you on again. That's good, Rick.
I wanted to do a podcast with you while we were there, but you're having such a good time, and I was too. But that one Sunday, me and Booker T had our signals crossed, and then I wasn't going to interview him until Monday. So I sat in my room all day Sunday waiting for him to give me a call. And I didn't want to call him and sweat him and say, hey, dude, where are you? Where are you? Hell, he was in Las Vegas covering a Pacquiao fight. So you and I could have done like a three-hour extravaganza and set a new podcast record. But nonetheless, at least we're talking now.
Hey, wait.
I've been serving the drink.
Yeah. Listen, you gave my pacemaker his first real run.
Yeah, I was talking about the Raw reunion a little bit, and I said, man, I was down there at the bar with Flair, and Flair was telling stories. So if Flair's going to be telling stories, I'm not going to tap out. I'm going to keep drinking. So people started jumping on your ass saying, well, Ric Flair is not supposed to be drinking. I saw you nurse about two or three Bud Lights, and Bud Light's about as light as you can get in the alcohol category, and you nursed them all night long. So I told people, I said, you know what?
I said, Rick, that's not entirely true.
Well, that was my side of the story.
I had like 10 of them, but they were mixed with tomato juice. What do they call those drinks? They make in Mexico, I forget. But, you know, I had a good time. I wouldn't have traded that for anything.
Well, that was kind of a one-off. Well, let me tell you something about the next day, man. I was kind of hungover the next day because I always pace myself here at the house, but you were telling stories all night long. You kind of holding court. I was like a parrot. I was right behind you, damn near on your right shoulder, laughing my ass off. And every time I'd give the guy the signal to bring me another margarita or another Jack and Coke or another beer, he didn't make a margarita worth a shit. So anyway, I kept rotating all my different alcohols. Hey.
You didn't mind telling them either.
Man, I'm super picky about that.
When I sat down at that bar and Wendy said that she told you we were there, I said, don't bother, Steve. You might be doing something. I told the bartender when you came down, I said, when Steve Austin comes out here, if he does, double everything that you pour him. And I gave him $100. You didn't know before he got down there. I said, whatever he orders, make it a double.
Well, here's the thing. You know, we hung out that first
night. That's the opening bid.
I know. Well, see, here's the thing. When you guys landed, I was already there because I got there a couple of days early to talk to Hogan. So me and Hogan did our thing. I was waiting for you and Wendy to come in, and Wendy sends me a text message at 4:30. We're here. We're waiting on you. And I texted her back. I said, now? ? So I said, F it. If Rick's ready to go now, I guess I'm going down.
Yeah. Hell, you can't stay in your hotel room by yourself all day.
But then we did it again the next night. But here's the thing. By the time I showed up at Monday Night Raw, I had stayed up so late with you two nights in a row. And then you brought in this cast of characters. I remember Joe Gomez from back in the day. And the other guy was absolutely on fire.
Dino
was laughing. I was laughing so hard at Dino's material because he was just cutting everybody. And then by the time we got to the Raw reunion, I talked to the WWE superstars for like 8 hours before we went on air. Yeah. By the time I went out to go cut my promo, my voice was basically gone because I'd partied too hard with you and then talked my voice out. So I effed myself is what I did.
Hey, it was great. Let me tell you, when you went out there, you just said what happened and people were dying. I mean, it was great. You know, it's like here, and I'm saying this to you as sincere as I can be. I'm watching the show last week, right? And I thought it was a good show all the way around. But what is funny is that they brought you on a split screen with Michael Cole on commentary. talking about the Seth Rollins. And in your promo, you did more for Seth than 10 hours of TV. You know that?
Well,
I don't know if you remember the content, but you know, you did it Steve Austin style with your, you know, basically your verbiage, leaving out some of the stuff because of the restrictions. But your 30-second or maybe it was a minute, whatever it was, commentary and talk about how glad you were and proud of Seth and just the whole deal got him over more than anything all night long.
Well, that's
what they're missing.
Well, I mean, that's a compliment because, you know, anytime you get a chance to go out there and do something like that, that's the task at hand. So if that was – and Seth's a tremendous worker, and I just think, man, when he turns up that entertainment factor, because, you know, he's pretty reserved on the horn. And, man, you know, if you go back and watch my promos, I mean, I never know what I'm going to say. I mean, I have things because of storylines and angles, so I know where I'm going. But I'll stutter or I'll miss a word, but it's all emotion. And if I go back and I watch all of your classic promos from NWA, WCW, you know, WWE, whatever territory you were in, you know, it's nothing but pure energy, which is just total off the charts, and it's entertaining. And everything that you say or everything that I say exemplifies and magnifies the character and made us both larger than life. And I think emotions sell tickets, but also being larger than life sells tickets. So, you know, if he can just learn to amp it up a little bit, because every time I got a stick in my hands, I was trying to channel and emit energy, and people feed off that. And no one told you how to do it. When was it, Rick, when you really put together a promo? Because I've been, you know, I always call you the goat, and I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, but I know you weren't born a great promo. How did it happen for you when you just turned into the nature boy and it was a limousine ride and jet flying and all that stuff? When did you understand? Let me ask you the question. When did you put two and two together just as far as turning it on the mic?
Well, it's funny because it's a two-part question. Number one, I idolized, you know, from the day I started Dusty Rhodes. And Dusty, you know, his interview was phenomenal, but he had a mentor too, a guy you might not remember, Thunderbolt Patterson.
Yes.
And Dusty, if you look back on Thunderbolt to find anything, Dusty was a version of Thunderbolt with all the energy and the little sayings within the sayings. And he was saying it as a white guy. Does that make sense?
Yep.
But he was a cowboy, a, you know, son of a plumber, poverty stricken and all that. But he had the energy and electricity and little things he did with his hands. If you remember that Thunderbolt did. And Thunderbolt had a hell of an interview, you know? He was an average performer, but when I first got down in the Mid-Atlantic area, Thunderbolt was on fire and classic and drew, you know, tons of money back when, you know, ringside seats were $5. I actually only got to be around him a little bit because he went down to Atlanta when I got to Charlotte, but Thunderbolt was a classic and drew a ton of money in the South. Dusty got that, and then going on to me, because I took that, and I started amping it up, I think, probably in the late 70s when I got comfortable with myself. But, you know, as we've talked about before, you and I privately, you can't bring to the ring what you're really not. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think that I look back at you, and I mean, your interviews were phenomenal. I mean, like I said, one time I'll make these promos sometimes that I will do going to an event, you know, and I'll say it. By the way, if I see Steve Austin, I'm going to have two beers. You probably heard about it. So, and that's good because I've been sick long enough for, but you know, one time I was going to say, and if I'm talking at the reunion, I don't want to hear one person say what? Well, the thing of it is, you've been gone for 10 years. And if somebody doesn't like what they're saying out there now, which is not just random, Steve. I watch both shows because I like to keep up to speed with what's going on, especially in the women's division. If someone's out there is dragging, man, right now, what? I'm not giving anybody a chance to. I'm not reminding anybody of that when I'm talking. Sorry, not dealing with that. I dealt with it a little bit when you and I got to work at the end of my career before you went back and retired with your injury, but that would have really pissed me off in my day of 20,000 people to go what when I was talking. That can break up anybody's trend of thought. What?
I wanted to talk with you a little bit about Harley Race because he recently just passed away, and you were showed me a picture of him at the Raw reunion. I knew he wasn't doing good, and I knew he had lung cancer, but I was watching a couple of those matches before you and I talked, and then people always ask me, you know, about working programs with Ric Flair, and I got a chance to work with you towards the end of your career and towards kind of when I was getting a little bit frazzled or burned out, but Stone Cold and Ric Flair could have set some box office records. Do you think we'd had some true chemistry in the ring? Because I watched the matches with you and Harley, you and Brody, you and Steamboat, all the guys that you had the classic matches with. How do you think you and I would have done?
Steve, I'll be honest with you, because it's funny. No more than we're having this discussion right now. I was at a Comic-Con this weekend in Philadelphia, actually, New Jersey, Cherry Hill. And I had two people bring this up to me. The matches you and I had, which I've actually watched back, where we couldn't punch each other with the right hand.
Yep.
You remember that?
Yes.
How that stipulation we ever got. And I said to the guy was telling me how great it was. And I said, that's the worst match me and Steve ever had. And I must have hit him in the eye 7 times. Blinded him because I had no other ammunition. How do you? I mean, and the same for Steve. You have.
That's all I had.
Yeah. What the hell? And Steve, he don't chop. I mean, that's all we did. And every time I went to cut you off, I mean, we got all the bumps in and that. But I said to myself, God, I raked his eyes or whatever I did 10 times. But to answer your question, if I had come along and I was going to, say this today if we got a chance to talk, but if I were 35 years old and met you when you were 35 years old, I mean, I can't help but say that we would have set records everywhere. I mean, it was, I don't think you realize, I'm sure you realize, I'm sorry. You are one of these guys, and I'll ask you a question later on if you don't mind, has set the pace for an era. I think I did that too, but there were so many great guys during my era. You set the pace with that attitude era that everybody fell in line with. And I mean, and I've heard Vince and other people acknowledge that too. I mean, you know, when you got one guy that is so dominant and everybody else can come along, and yes, the attitude era was there and all that, but I mean, everybody, it followed what the precedent that you set. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And like my business, I always wanted to go on after Dusty, and I wanted to hear what he had to say. In other words, on my promo, right?
Right.
So I'm sure that, you know, the guys in when you were there in this attitude era, they didn't want to follow you. Well, hell, you were on last every night to hold the show, as was Vince. Or you opened it, and maybe you did a crossover. They knew that if I'm the interview guy, I don't want to follow Steve Austin, right? And so with Dusty and I, and he had the pencil so he could control that, but I was out there doing everything I could to make sure he couldn't follow. If he was after me, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because it is competitive. I mean, you know, nowadays the all in thing has any success at all, it shouldn't be the goal of everybody to be the best in the WWE anymore, which is a goal that was all that was allowed or would recognize. It should be who's the best in the business, like it used to be.
Right.
When there was NWA, WWE, you know what I mean? Or when there was New Japan and All Japan, it was who was the best in the business. You just mentioned that the young lady, that's with NXT now that I have met but haven't seen perform. I mean, I like the business better when you were getting compared. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
We don't have this wrestling magazines with a rank, and the guys, I used to look every week to see a paper with the head of me and the most hated.
Hey, you know what? The thing about those magazines, those were like a shoot for the boys.
Of course they were. They were for me. I made a promo in Baltimore time when Brett came over. I said, let me tell you something, because I know Brett and Dave Meltzer are good friends, and I like Dave a lot, too. We're good. I've known him since 89. I made a promo on live TV where I said, let me tell you something, Brett. When they start naming an award after you, like me and Lou Fez with Dave, then you could tell me you're number one in the world. That's not an interview. Of course we do. We all acknowledge that. People go, oh, we don't read that. Are you kidding me? Those guys still read it up at WWE and the guys that are all in.
Oh, shoot. You got to tell me a couple of Harley Race stories, because I've told my chiropractic stories when Harley was trying to fix my neck. And I thought he was going to damn near paralyze me. But when Harley started working on you, you just couldn't say no. I know he was probably very influential in your career. But Harley was, 7 years older than you, give or take?
So 7 years older, yep.
So he's a half generation ahead of you.
76.
Okay, six.
He was 76.
So you're watching this guy, and you're coming up a little bit behind him, and then all of a sudden you guys are working. And you'd probably heard about the legend that was Harley Race. So how was it the first time you met the guy, and what were your impressions of him? And then had his reputation of toughness preceded him?
Okay, well, here's the deal. I grew up on Harley. I'm from Minneapolis. And long before, I think Harley was going back and forth, but Harley actually worked for Vern back in the 60s. I'm in high school, and I, get a call from my friends, and everybody knew I liked wrestling growing up. I watched it religiously, and then I got sent away to private school where I couldn't see it. But Harley got stabbed at a bar called the Chestnut Tree, and it reads in the paper, wrestler Harley Race, in a fight, defending somebody, which he was not breaking up, but getting in a fight, as Harley could get in real easy. And he got stabbed, and it tells the whole story about it. He went to the hospital with a knife in, and they pulled the knife out there. And I mean, that's when I first started following Harley Race. And the story is that when he got out, he went over and shot out all the windows of a place called Cal's Barbecue, which I, of course, asked Harley when I got to know him, and he did. And Harley didn't go anywhere without his 9mm. Trust me. I can authenticate that, asking a lot of guys. Also tell you about Harley bringing the 9mm in the dressing room when he heard that the plastic champion is trying to take over Kansas City, Ricky. I'm going to go next door and have a word with him. You hold the fort down here and tell Brody he's going to do the job tonight. Okay, Harley, I'll just leave Brody alone.
That's not right. That's not exactly the kind of news you want to convey to Brody.
I trust they never did. It never left my lips. But anyway, so when I first met Harley, I was in McCook, Nebraska, and I was just anxious to meet him. I didn't know how tough he was, because if you met Harley, when he was young, he was a handsome guy, and he had his hair dyed blonde, but the reputation, the little bit that I knew about him, as soon as you got around the guy, you could just see when he walked in the dressing room. I mean, even back when he was real young, treated him differently because of what they'd heard about him and what they knew about him. I didn't know that in 72, but, as soon as I started in the business, one story that's legendary to me is we're in Greensboro and he vertical suplexed Andre, slammed Andre, right? And I think I sent you that tape when I was sending you the stuff about Harley, but I mean, he slammed him, chest high, just picked him up, scooted him, and slammed him. So, me, the kid that I am, is so stupid, and I've known him for a while then. So I said, Harley, I said, you ask Andre about that? I didn't see you go over to that dressing room. Ask Andre what? I said, did you ask him if you could slam him and suplex him? I called it in the ring. like I always do. Why would I ask him? that's just how he says it to you. Why would I ask him? 109. I can assure you, 100 didn't want anything to do with Harley. Nobody did, man. I mean, everybody talked about Harley, and I mean, I can go from Dick Murdoch to Terry Funk to Jack Briscoe, and you know, at the reunion, we're talking, telling stories, and I had just seen him and all that. But I got to say, across the board, that everybody was aware of Harley, and I've never seen anybody in our business even talk behind his back. And that's the truth. I've never heard anybody say, "Hey, well, I'm gonna kick his ass."
I was watching a video on YouTube, you know, and Ole Anderson, you know, Ole didn't put anybody over, and he was saying when he said he was a little out there, but you know, Ole didn't put over anybody, but he said exactly how tough Harley was. And yeah, I've never heard anybody dispute that at all. And the funny thing about it was, I had been watching Harley for all these years growing up as a fan of the business of professional wrestling. And when I met him in WCW, you know, I just knew that he was just this grizzled vet. But to your point, just the way he carried himself and conducted himself in the locker room, he wasn't trying to be a tough guy. You just had this feeling that when you were around him, he commanded your respect. I mean, and it was by nothing that he did. It was just by the way he carried himself.
Yep. Yeah. Listen, when I think about Harley Race, you know, I've said this, you know, to other people too. I got this terminology from Nash. So I was like what they call I'm the last traveling world champion, if that makes sense.
Correct.
I know it does. Because I, you know, like literally, I could be in New Zealand one night, Tokyo the next, and be in St. Louis, and then back to, and I have done that gig before. You know, I probably broke down a couple of times along the way. You're going to hear about stories where I cracked on plane rides more than about how tough it was. I've sat down a lot of times and said to somebody, I didn't even know, can I talk to you for a minute? I'll tell you about that story in just a minute, but to answer your question, I mean, the only guy I've ever seen stand up to Harley and sucker punch him was Jack Mulligan. But I've got to say this, I never saw anybody mess with Jack Mulligan either. Jack Mulligan was 6'9", 320 pounds, and he had a hand on him the size of a catcher's mitt. Jack was tougher than hell. The thing about Jack is he just had the shortest fuse. I'm sure you've heard that. Yeah, I mean, Barry came to TV one time carrying a gun. He was so scared of his dad. So, you know, we're Channel 36 out there in the middle of nowhere. That was one of Ted Turner's stations before the Superstation in Charlotte. And everybody was waiting for Jack to come in the door. Talking about Ole Anderson. Ole Anderson and you'll love this story. We're talking about tough guys. So it's Ole and Gene and against Barry and Jack when Barry first started. Norfolk sold out. Mulligan hated Ole anyway, and Ole knew it. So that just lined up or it sold out to watch this go on. And I didn't see what happened, but somehow Barry, you know, Jack got the notion that they were dicking around with Barry. Boy, he walked over and poor Gene was sitting on the apron, standing on the apron, and he slapped Gene Anderson so hard, he flew off the apron. He just grabbed Barry, walked back down the hallway. You've been in Old Scope, I'm sure you guys
did
it one time. And separate dressing rooms, you know what I mean? And he told Anderson, told Ole, I'll see you in that dressing room. And Ole wouldn't go in. Ole just walked down the hall. At interviews, I can't remember what the exact context of what Ole said was, but like some fat cowboy or Indian, I think it was Wahoo and Jack against the Andersons. And boy, Jack opened, he went over. We sat in the bleachers in the studio. They had bleachers where we made TV, and he slapped Ole and knocked him right off. Jack, he had just a hair trigger temper. But anyway, I did see him punch Harley and went down between the beds, double beds, and, you know, it took about 10 of us to break it up. Nobody got the best. There was ever another punch thrown. And what happened, Harley got pinned against the wall of the bed. But, man, you know, that was not comfortable. The party was over. Everybody was walking around. I was looking for another room to go to. You knew Harley was going to make a comeback.
Yeah, either that or go grab that 9mm.
Yeah. But, no, he would have made a comeback. Just if we got him separated, and I just, you know, that's one of those deals where it's like, you know, John Wesley Hart and Wyatt Earp, I mean, maybe they don't want to find out, but Mulligan was so big, and I'm sure you've heard, he just had a hair-trigger temper, man. Wow.
Yeah, and the few times I got a chance to meet that guy, he was really nice to me.
Oh, yeah, that's what I tell you. What Sean, I've been telling Shawn Michaels for years about Jack, so at the Hall of Fame, when they inducted the Blackjacks in Chicago in 2005, Sean walked into the weight room of training, and Jack and Julie, his wife Julie, were in the hot tub, and Sean walked over and said, "You're Mr. Mulligan, Jack Mulligan." And Jack said, "Yeah, that's me." And he said, "Are you half as dumb as Ric Flair told me you are?" And he said, "You know what he said to Sean?" "I certainly am." You remember the name Bob Roop?
Yes.
Yeah, Bob was like a 92 Olympian. Not 92, 70. Anyway, Bob, my age, or a little bit older. We don't put it on the Olympic team. He about killed Bob Roop in the dressing room in the Boltwell Auditorium. And Bob, he just came out of his chair. He was a fag Harley. He didn't smoke Marlboros. He was a Salem guy. Boom, 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 boom. Oh, hell, he stuck a punch to Andre at Norfolk on the beach. Murdoch and I and Wahoo and Andre are sitting there, and Andre dragged him and Murdoch out in about 4 feet of water and damn near drowned him. He held them both underwater. That time he bit off too much, you know what I mean?
Right.
But, yeah, Jack would just go like, he could be talking about something, and he would just go bilateral on. He was living in Orlando, right? And as he started to get congestive heart failure, he was gaining weight. He got up to over 400 pounds. And I kept track of him through different people. And he called me one time and said, "What are you doing calling my wife? I haven't seen Julie in 20 years, right?" I said, "I'm not calling your wife. What are you talking about? When I see you, I'm going to beat the fuck out of you. It ain't me." Someone's ripping. "I know what I hear. I know you. I used to travel with you. Are you kidding me? I know all about you and women. You're calling my wife." I said, "Swear to God." Hey, one time I was a month late on rent, and he grabbed me, lifted me a foot off the ground. I said, "Jack, it's only a day late." I sure didn't say, "Hey, this is a nature boy, man. Put me down. I got news." "Jack, it's only a day late.
Going back to Harley Race, when you're working with Harley Race, and obviously if you're working with the world champ, you've earned a shot at him. So there you are standing across from a ring. I don't imagine Harley was a guy who set up a whole lot of stuff. Maybe later on there was a couple of things that might happen, but I'm sure it was all called in the ring. And you were a hell of a worker at that time as well, and you had a little bit faster paced style. And Harley, I always considered classic style, and you had maybe one
never
more
changed.
Gear. Yeah, you had one more gear that you liked to go to, or if not two. So how was working with Harley? And obviously, I mean, I'm assuming 100% that Harley was calling those first matches.
All of them, exactly. With Harley, you know, I never even thought about it because you just got in the ring. And first of all, I was thrilled the first couple of times to even be there, but there was no talking about it. You knew what was going on. You went in and you just pretend like you're riding a Greyhound bus and leave the driving to me. You know, I mean, one tackle, drop down, leapfrog, come off low, daddy. I didn't laugh at anybody. Here's, you know, it's funny because back then, the people just had to know. I mean, Did I send you that thing where he's holding the NWA belt? And he goes, "This is the Muhammad Ali of wrestling, and you'll have to kill me to get it." Watch that interview yourself. He just was so authentic. Would he be a classic interview guy? No. What people call him the greatest? But everything he said, especially when he turned the volume up and started pointing his finger, you thought, holy, you know, this guy is legit. And the fans back then were more in tune to the good guy, bad guy. That makes sense?
Right.
And he was the bad guy that stared the face of any type of fear. He stared it down, or any type of intimidation. He wasn't intimidated by anything. I mean, walking into a bar with Harley, you know, got two blonde haired guys. I mean, you know, just, you know the deal, right? In the old days.
Yeah.
Well, you experienced that. You were in Dallas and all that. It's just been in the last 20 years that it's become, where we don't have that opportunity doesn't come around very often. But, you know, back then guys were jumping in the ring and all that. I mean, Harley loved for a guy to jump in the ring. Jesus Christ. He would just leave his opponent. I'm being facetious. He'd probably say, "Stay here. I'll be right back." Don't move. I've got something to do.
How did that knee drop feel that he did?
Never. You can't feel anything. You couldn't feel the headbutt. He was just a machine. You know, I took his knee drop. I stole that from him. You know the story about Vince, you know, calling me to his office and asking me about who taught me to slam off the top rope?
Yep.
I said it at my Hall of Fame speech. You were there. And I go, I said, "Who taught you that?" And I went, "Harley Race." He looked at me and said, "Get out of here. I don't want to see it again." So Harley was at my Hall of Fame speech, as were you, and Harley was in the audience when I told that story, but sometimes all you had to do was say his name, you know. Hey, you know where he was the night before Starcade, right?
No.
He was in New York with Vince. Vince offered him a lot of money. I don't want to give the exact figure, but I know what it is. This is coming, it's coming from Harley, but I'm pretty sure Harley wouldn't embellish it.
I've heard that number. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and not to show up. And it was a snowstorm. We were sold out. Traffic was backed up from Meldon Road, which is the exit road in the Greensboro from Charlotte, was backed up 40 miles. I mean, they turned away. It was a major snowstorm. 8 o'clock. I mean, the show was, everybody's supposed to be there at 6, right? 6:30, no Harley. You know, the matches are going on. 9 o'clock, Harley walked in. And, you know, planes were delayed and all that. And, you know, he looked at Crockett and said, "You and I need to talk." So he put down his bag, he walked down the hall of Crockett, came back, and walked into my dressing room and said, "I'd never let you down, kid. Let's get this over with. And don't pay any attention to Kaniski. He'll just get in the way."
And he kind of did.
Yeah, he did. We tripped. I mean, it was brutal. You couldn't, Gene wanted to break everything.
Yeah.
Hey, sympathize with me. I wrestled Gene Kaniski for an hour in St. Louis when I was a champion. Give me a break. He threw me across the ring and screamed at me, like scissors. Gene jumped on top of me and like, "What are you doing, you dumb son of a bitch? I told you to leg scissor me." And I was the champion.
Jesus.
Yeah. No, those guys were just—they were intense, man. I wrestled Pat for over an hour, Dick the Bruiser. I mean, I got them all, and I mean, it's nice to have on your resume. But it was—you can learn a lot from the older guys. And boy, it was just a different time in life. The Bruiser'd come in, he'd walk into the building at 9:30, 10 o'clock, you know, and you know, it's funny. They wanted me to take a fall on Dick, you know, with the figure four, and I don't know. So anyway, you know, because everybody had a finish there, and that's what they did. You know, Wilbur Snyder won with the abdominal stretch. Vern won with the sleeper. When the Von Erichs were there, they won with the claw. I mean, that was just your finish. Nobody If the center was your finish, nobody else did the center. You never saw anything like business now, right? I said to Dick, I go, what, you know, to the rep, to Harley, because Sam would have never gone for it. I said to Harley, when the referee's looking at Dick, let me hold the rope, which you never did, right? And let Dick lay back and count 1, 2, 3 so he doesn't have to give up, because I could see he was really struggling with it, you know. And it, but that's when Sam was running the NWA. Everybody just, it was like, whatever Sam said went. When Geigel became the president and the Von Erich kids came along and Fritz, you know, had more power, and it just, you know, it diluted it. But when Sam ran it, it was an hour or the champ went over. So that was what drove Jack and Dory and everybody crazy, with those hour Broadways, you know, on every continent every night. True story. I grabbed the rope, and we almost had a riot in St. Louis. People had never seen it.
When you were wrestling with Harley, though, and you would take that face bump, which, and I can't remember, I don't know when you started doing it, but I know Ole hated it, but that was one of your trademark things. And
well,
people just went crazy for it. My question to you was going to be, what did Harley think about the face bump? Because he was that half generation before you of that classic style wrestling. Did you get the face bump from somebody? Because to me, it was one of the trademark Ric Flair things, which was so effing entertaining.
But do you think, did I ever do that with Harley?
I can't.
I don't think I ever did. My explanation for that is, Steve, and I've said this before, as my performance declined, I found that medium called entertainment. And that's all that was. I mean, I don't think I started doing that until, you know, I just felt like I wasn't the guy I was for a long time. Does that make sense?
I don't know. I saw you do it for so many times for so long. I just thought you did it because it was so entertaining.
Well, when the people started popping, I started doing it more, you know. Hell, they only hated me going upside down, you know. Nobody minded Ray Stevens doing it all night long. You know, Ole just didn't like a lot of things. But the fact that Ole, you know, Ole had the Vern Gagne mentality. He wouldn't move forward. If Vern had allowed his ego, and Vern, gosh, I love Vern Gagne to death, whether it was ego or whatever it was, to go with the entertainment route, they might still be in business. But
right.
When Vince threw entertainment at him, you know, long before you got there, you know, it became a more of a show than it did just wrestling. As you know, it became character driven. And until you came along, back, you know, they tried it with the Warrior. He couldn't follow Hulk. They tried it with a couple of different guys. And really, until you came along, and you know, this thing, the wrestling wars and all that, you brought, in my opinion, you, Sean, and Brett, and then I guess Hunter came in there, whatever time frame. Then they had entertainment, and they had real wrestling. That makes sense?
Right.
I mean, the matches you were having with Brett and Sean, and I mean, those are tremendous matches and great interviews. I mean, you know, and I wouldn't say great. Yours, obviously, is great. Yeah, I haven't heard enough from them to make that call, but you had a great interview. Then comes The Rock, and, you know, Hunter had a good view. Sean, everybody had a good interview. A couple guys had great ones, like yourself and The Rock. I mean, it was, and man, all of a sudden, whatever momentum we had, they had given away, number one, by giving sold-out arenas 2-minute matches. I'm talking about WCW. You know, doing stuff where the guys didn't want to do the favor, whoever it was, you know who I'm talking about.
Right.
You know, which is, I wasn't involved in that, but I had to live it. And I knew, I just sat there, you know, just like I wouldn't go out every night, you know, and say, hey, Vince is going out of business. I said, you can punish me all you want. And Bischoff did. He fired me, sent me home, and I mean, fired me because I went to a wrestling tournament that I'd asked for time off. He just, you know, couldn't figure out. You know, with me, it was out of sight, out of mind. And I understand the other guys. I just didn't want to be in a position of doing favors for guys that were way below where I had been in the business. The guys on top, no problem. But I'm not going to list the number of guys. It's like It's my team, which we'll talk about sometime. Where are they now? I've done the favor for guys that you've never heard of.
Right.
And I was, at that time, you know, I'd been a world champion, you know, for the NWA, you know, when business was totally kayfabe and totally about wrestling. I'd done all that. And, you know, Russo buried me in the desert. Do you remember that? You probably don't. It was so insignificant. After I wrestled Eddie Guerrero in Vegas, they took me out and buried me in the desert.
I don't remember that.
You know? Oh, yeah, he buried me in the desert. You know what he said to me riding out there? He said, "You must hate me because I hear you're friends with Cornette." I said, "I don't even know who you are." I never heard of Vince Russo. Why would I? You know, they buried me in the desert, and then he said, "I'm going to give you a 6-8 months off, and then we'll bring you back." He called me in a week and said, "I need you to come back because the rating went way down." I said, "Hey, I'm in the desert." And I stood my ground. So I came home in 2 weeks. You know, it's like, after I put Hulk over, not switching gears to me, but these are stories that a lot of people don't understand. When I did the favor for Hulk, you know, and Hulk just smartened me up to this. The first time I wrestled Hulk, Orlando, Shaquille O'Neal, you remember that?
Yes.
Sherry's managing me, and man, I'm thrilled, right? It's me and Hulk. It's a big time deal for us. And Hulk just told me this the other day. Gets heat with me now. Eric went to the company and said, "If we do well at this pay-per-view, will you let me, you know, will you give me the money to move forward in the direction I want to go with, like Nitro and all that?" And they said, "Yeah, well, I've never heard that story." The Hulk told me the other day, literally 2 weeks ago, at the reunion. So we did that number. I guess we did a real good number. I have no idea what it was. And that's where he got the money. And so I put Hulk over. It's a three-match deal. The next one is the Clash of Champions, Des Moines, Iowa. And Arn, you know, who's a very smart guy in the business, comes up with the Tonya Harding deal. Do you remember? You were there.
Yeah.
You and Steamboat stole the show, right?
Yeah.
So Arn would do the thing. You guys are out there. Everybody was screaming, running out of time. And we remember we hit Hulk in the leg. Arn did with the curtain, the Tonya Harding gig, right? Bischoff said, "Well, we can't switch it back because Hulk feels like the marketing isn't right." You know, I really didn't care. I was just happy to be in the main event. It wasn't about winning or losing. You know, at that point, I just wanted to have a good match, which we did, get back to the bar and have fun. So now we get to Detroit, the third match, when Ali's there, Tommy Hearns, Mr. T's a special referee, right? It's Sherry me the cage, right? And this is the loser. I go, you know, do you know all these stories?
No.
Yeah, loser retires, right? So they call me. You know, they plug it. They do the match, right? Not loser retires yet. And Eric calls me and says, "Hey, ticket sales. Dane Breslau says the tickets aren't going very well. So how about if we put the stipulation retired? I'll give you a year off. Pay you." I said, "Yeah." I said, "But my contract runs out next month." And so Bill Shaw is running the company at that time. "I hope you're taping all this. I didn't know you didn't know all this."
No.
This is my life. Yeah. So we get to Detroit, haven't got a word. And so I told Eric, I said, "Look, I've never said no in my life except with the deal with Luger, which I feel bad about to this day. But here's the situation. I'm not going in there tonight as much as I want to without that contract. I'm doing this again, 3 in a row. And I know he's getting paid a lot more than me. So that's fine. I'm stupid. I didn't follow up." Those are my exact words. So I signed the contract with Bill Shaw at a TBS. I sign it. It's for 2 years, $500,000. That's my base, right? And I do it. I'm supposed to be out for a year. A month later, less than a month, because there was a problem with Rude and a problem with Vader, which I won't go into because neither one of them are here to defend themselves, but there was a problem with them with Hulk. So I came back. Don't you remember when I came out of the crowd and did all that? I mean, back. So I've retired, come back, and then people are saying, "Well, God, when's Ric Flair going to get away from the business?" Well, I was supposed to be away and getting paid, but it didn't work like that. You know, and then when he fired me and went in front of all the people, you know, all the guys, 70 people, I heard about it. Booker T was the first guy to call me. One of the reasons I think so much of him said, man, he just buried you. Said he was going to bankrupt your family, your kid, bankrupt you. I mean, you know, which he sued me, I sued them. And had I elected, you know, TBS, had I elected to sit it out, you know, I'd have gotten rich. You can't, an executive can't say that, can't talk like that. And that was a home run. But after a year, not getting paid, and, you know, Vince wanted me to come to Greensboro and sit in the front row because my son had won the Nationals. And they were going to have Ross say, hey, by the way, a special guest tonight, but if I'd have walked into Greensboro, right, with Reed and sat in the front row, they're going to say, we got a champion with us tonight, and they were going to walk over and interview Reed. So, you never heard that story?
No.
Oh, yeah, they called me, wanted me. I said, guys, I just can't. I mean, if I do that, then I'm just, you know, it's not that I didn't want to, and especially for Reed. He would have loved that, right? But, you know, I just couldn't get myself. You know, my problem is you get loyal, but at that point in time, it didn't pay off for me. So John Taylor said to me, which I acknowledged at the Hall of Fame, who was my attorney in Atlanta, said, look, Rick, you need to ride this thing out. Yeah, you're going to make a lot of money, or you go back to work, because Vincent called me. And, Bischoff, I'd met Bischoff, and either go back to work or you sit home forever. So I went back. We had that thing in Greenville, which you were at. We were drinking your beer, remember?
Yep.
When I wrestled Hunter. No. Greenville, you were gone. You were already gone. Greenville, when I came back with the Four Horsemen. And I went back, and then I had that little feud with Eric, and then they killed me again. You know, and eventually the company went out of business. And Jim Ross called me the day that they went out, the company, and said, ready to go to work? And I said, yeah, and I didn't hear from him for a year. So that, hence, daytime drinking. It started in 99, man. If the country club can open at 5 for the golfers, they can open at 11 for me.
Make sure to stick around after this podcast to get the latest headlines from the AP News Minute.
What you do in the bedroom is totally up to you and your partner or partners. But if you're not using Trojan brand condoms, you're missing out on a safe and enjoyable experience. Protect yourself from STIs and unintended pregnancy with Trojan condoms. You don't think of condoms without thinking about Trojan, and with over 30 different varieties, there's a lot to choose from. You see how people pick out their condoms at the store. They grab a random box and head to the checkout like a sorry SOB. Well, those days are over. Confidently walk into that store, grab a pack of Trojan condoms, and march up to that register with your head held high. Buying condoms shouldn't be this awkward because it's important. 20 million Americans contract an STI each year, and half are younger than 25. That's why you should go with the number one most trusted condom brand on the market. And it doesn't matter if you're 2 months or 2 years into your relationship. Trojan condoms will be there every step of the way. Now go get your Trojan brand condoms today.
Football season is around the corner, and Podcast One Sportsnet has the best shows to help you build the best fantasy team in the league.
You can do it!
Break down all of the latest NFL news on Pro Football Focus Fantasy Football Podcast, then serve up some picks with Ross Tucker's Fantasy Feast.
Honestly, I think it's ridiculous in real life, let alone ridiculous in fantasy football.
Take a spin with the fantasy record or rise above with the Underdog Sports Fantasy Hour.
Just when you think this guy's going to come into a season fully healthy, it looks like he may not.
Dominate the competition and download new episodes of these shows and more every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
You brought up Hulk Hogan's name a while ago, and I always wanted to know, because I got a chance to hang out with the guy a couple of hours when I did a podcast with him down there in Tampa. And, man, I was very competitive, you know, and when he was having his run in New York, obviously he was a full generation ahead of me, if not a little bit more. And so, you know, I was a big fan. And when it came down to WCW, I didn't like it because that put me another step down on the ladder just because now you've got Hulk Hogan there. So then I went to New York, and then he ended up coming to New York. And to hang out with him and spend time with him, I enjoyed the hell out of it. I had a great time hanging out with Terry Bollea, the man.
Yeah.
He said, you know what, if we'd have gotten a room and just kind of had a talk, we probably could have worked together and made a lot of money. And I agreed with him. But my question to you is, because you were down there, you were the standard bearer for NWA, you know, with, you know, all the great guys that were down there. But when you became the world champion and you were the Nature Boy, you were professional wrestling. But as him being the face of the WWF with the promotional yep. machine that Vince had, he was yep. probably more worldwide known, and you're considered by me and him to be the GOAT. So what was the relationship between yourself and Hogan whenever you guys crossed paths?
Hey, I'm so glad you asked me that. And this is obviously, I hope I'm not exhausting you, but these are questions that people have they've asked me and I never get to say it. I had a phenomenal relationship with Hulk. I'm the one, Eric called me in the office and said, how well do you know Hogan? I said, very well. Because when I was up there in 91 or 92, and I'm the first to admit, I wasn't a big card. I mean, did I draw money? Yes, I did. But I wasn't nearly the card on the East Coast, especially New York and all that. Like, in my day, my New York was St. Louis. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That was the NWA. Okay. Hulk was Madison Square Garden. So when I was up there in the 90s, and I really got to know him well, I had a ball with him. I mean, you know, we had a great time. He took me whenever he had a charter. You know, he'd say he'd never work two shows, or sometimes we work a couple of shows, but we sold out everything we did. But I just didn't have the exposure off the network, off TVS, that the regular TV had. It took me a while to catch up. But I think the world of him. This is stuff that I have never shared with anybody. My son got a contract with the WWF, right? And he was all set to go, but his mom wanted me to call and say that he needed to get more money. Well, between that time and, you know, when I hadn't even seen it yet because I was gone, he got really sick. So, well, to make a long story short, if that contract had gone in and Ann Gord had gotten it, a name from the past, all those rehabs would have been paid for by the company. So he was in rehab 6 times, all out of pocket. I don't regret a dime of it. I don't regret a dime of it. But, and no health insurance, because it just canceled everything when you go to the unit at that level. And you know who I went to for help one time? Hulk. Because that was like, you know, almost $500,000 in rehab therapy. And they don't take credit cards.
Yeah.
You know, it's in advance. And it's 40 grand a pop. You know what I mean? Plus all the stuff that goes along with it. So Hulk was there, man. And I can never, ever thank him enough. And we've become great friends. Anyway, getting back to WCW, I saw what was going on. And I loved working with Hogan. So all I wanted to do was be part of it. Okay? I'm the dumbass who didn't see Hulk coming in and getting this contract, whatever it was. And then, of course, that I went and got Randy, too. So I flew down to St. Pete with Eric and got Randy. Or got him over at that old hotel, and Randy came. And, you know, you say you went down a notch. I mean, it took me from, I would just kept burying myself. You know, and then came Kevin and Scott, and then, you know, Sting came. I mean, it is what it was. So, you know, my handwriting was on the wall. But I loved being, anytime I could get in the ring with Hulk, I loved it because it gave me the rub. I mean, here I am, you know, going back to you, you know, I got to wrestle Steve Austin, hell, and I'm 55 years old at that time, right? You know what that does for me? I mean, it puts me on the map, Steve. I was smart enough to figure that out, and I loved every minute of it. It's just like doing this podcast. This is not doing, well, I'm not going to use anybody else's example. I'm doing Steve Austin's podcast, and I'm getting to tell stories that are true and can be verified. So, and it's good because, you know, I look as every time it's like, it's terrible to say, but every time someone like Harley Race dies, attention falls to the people that are left in that category. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm not talking about me being tough, but I mean,
guys that were the traveling world champions. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
There's two left. I called Dora Terry the other day, and he couldn't come to the funeral because Terry's very sick. And I'm hoping he'll make it, but, you know, it's got, for Terry not to come to Harley's funeral, you can imagine how. And Dory just turned 80. So, I mean, you know, there's three of us left. So it's hard to believe the time has gone by that fast. I struggle with the fact that I'm 70 because my back doesn't hurt. My knees are great. I feel like $1 million. But anyway, focus on Hogan. I can wander. I'm sorry. I consider him a great friend. When I went in the hospital, as you know, because you were 24/7 with Wendy for months when I was incoherent. So, you know, you and Hulk and Michael Hayes, the guys at WWE, Vince FaceTime me. I mean, Steamboat, Dallas came to see me. You know, it wasn't about who came to see me. It's the whole world reached out to me.
Right.
You know, and then I wake up, find out, and you know, I've discussed this, but I never lose sight of it that you're there talking to Wendy and it's 12 o'clock her time. I mean, she's lucky enough that you in a different time frame because she was calling you all the time. It was a difficult time for my family trying to figure out, you know, there was a time when they thought about putting me in a nursing home because it was that bad. And all of a sudden I got over to the rehab center. Well, you know, you've heard it all.
Yeah.
You know, but Hogan was the first guy there, man. He got on a Learjet, came walking in. And you know how it is. Steve Austin walks in the hospital. Every goddamn nurse and doctor in the hospital is going to come and see you, right? Well, they did for Hulk. Hell, they might as well just left me for dead in the room. They all ran to Hulk for autograph.
Before we stop, you know, like when I was down there with Terry, with Hulk, in Tampa, we were talking, we were shooting the breeze, and it's like I just got finished doing a lot of rounds for media for my show that's on USA Network right now.
Which was great. I enjoyed that.
Oh, thank you. Awesome. Obviously, anytime someone talks to me, we're trying to talk with about the subject at hand, which is promoting my show, but it always goes back to my wrestling career. And I'm always cool talking about my wrestling career because it's what put me where I'm at in a position to have this show. And it's what I loved and cared about and was most passionate about for my entire life. So when I'm talking and I'm referring to Hogan being so well known and yeah, I had my run, but I always get in there somewhere that Flair was the greatest of all time to do it. And you were just talking about being the traveling world champion. And even though the business was a work, that championship is a shoot because of your 60-minute Broadways, your 90-minute Broadways, or your 45s, or whatever it was, but it was worldwide, and you were the guy that did it at the highest standard. So, and you just said 45 minutes ago, sometimes you're talking to the person next to you, hey, you got a second? And I guess you're decompressing or downloading on them. And I know that I think I've heard the story from you or others that when Jack Briscoe finally, you know, handed the belt over, I mean, like it wasn't a fight. He was ready to get rid of the thing. So how tough was that? I mean, because you're the last one to do it at that, the traveling world champion, and anybody that knows anything says that you're the GOAT. And that's my true belief. When you look back now and look at everything you just went through, okay, how was that ride? And how in the hell did you always manage to look like $1 million with those frickin' suits?
Well, let me tell you something else. That ride enables me to be here with you right now. So the God's honest truth with Steve outside a couple times that I had a nervous breakdown. I know I did right there, and I'll tell you one story. You'll have 3 margaritas on tonight. Steve, I had fun. I'm not lying to you. Was it hard? Yeah, but back then, I didn't think of it. I liked getting dressed up, and I liked being Ric Flair. That was one of my problems. That's when Sean and I got sideways on telling me I never... Hell, Richard Flair wasn't around after I was 12 years old. And he's still hard to find, especially if Steve Austin's in town. Hey, no, listen, I had a great time. The traveling was brutal, but you don't look at it back then because you are experiencing things that nobody else in the world can. I mean, Harley, I dropped the belt. Here's one of the trips. I dropped the belt to carry in Dallas. I fly from Dallas to Frisco. It's me and Harley and our wives on a Hong Kong, Singapore, Japan tour, right? Like the vacation, right? Well, I no more than get in the air and they're calling me when we land in Hong Kong because Kerry missed his first or second shot. They're going to put the title back on me in Japan, right? So it just means, I mean, we drank, that's back in the first class cabin, the 747, the upper cabin was a lounge and Harley could smoke and all that, right? Well, hell, we drank all the way to Hong Kong. Harley was telling stories and just things that you just can't imagine. Literally, I think if you and I sat down, by the way, I'm coming to L.A. the 3rd, and I was going to give you that bad news after the podcast was over. and I ain't going home on the red eye, and Wendy ain't coming. So, that's 2.5 weeks. So, the fun and the camaraderie, I mean, meeting all these guys, it's so funny because the guys, when every territory he went to, the deal was, God, the champions in town, you know, and they'd all tell their wives. Their wives hated me. They didn't even know me, you know, because their guys would come out and we'd stay out all night long, and they were making $50. I'd buy them drinks all night, and they'd take me to the best bar. And now guys I didn't even know, but guys like Lynn Denton, you know, and I'm wrestling Billy Jack one night for an hour, and I got all these guys that they're like Lynn Denton and the Bournes and all these kids, I see them coming up and along, and I just have so many great memories of travel. Somebody reminded me, Barry Darso called me the other day and said, do you remember the time you took me around New Zealand with you? And I had forgotten. he said to come hang out with me. He said, I said to come hang out with me, kid. And I took him all around New Zealand for a week. He said, I paid for his room and bought him drinks and food. I'd forgotten about that. But you look for somebody, you know, that you can have fun with, you travel with them, like you and Brian Pillman, right? I mean, you know, and I'm sure that was a huge loss for you. But you and Brian were like that. Arn and I mean, God, I can't think of a time we didn't have fun. But I'll tell you, these two. Can I say son of a bitch on your show?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, I'll tell you two stories. One, so I'm wrestling in the Florida all week long. I'm wrestling Rotundo, Barry Windham, Dusty, and Butch Reed. Okay. And all hours every night. We start in West Palm on Monday, go all week long. Finally, Sunday, it's me and Butch Reed. And it's this is what Eddie Graham's deals. A cage match where you can't use the cage as a weapon for 1 hour. In the old sport, it's called the sports arena, tin building, 120 degrees, Orlando in the summer. And the next day, I've got to go to Tokyo, through Chicago on Northwest. So I wrestle Butch and all that, and I cut myself 47 times. Because you can't. I just went in all taped up, but they just started punching me in the head. We don't need a cage. You know, and Butch could press slam me and all that. So I'm traveling with Eddie Guerrero that week. You must have met Eddie. Not Eddie, but the Hector. You must have met Hector in your travels, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Guerreros are fun. And they could drink, too. So I've been through the whole family. So back then, there was no cell phone, so my heart was racing, like going crazy. I called my dad. I got back to Tampa from Orlando. I said, Dad, geez, I got to go to Japan. My heart's racing. My dad said, when was the last time you had any sleep? And I thought about it. I hadn't been to bed all week. You know, Florida's hard.
Yeah.
Hard to go to sleep. So anyway, I get up early out of Tampa. I ended up drinking all night there with Hector. And get up and I fly Tampa, Chicago. And I get on the flight. And, man, I just started to crack. I almost said, I'm not going. And I just said, okay, get on it. You know, you'll work it out. I got in the plane, and, you know, this is back before I discovered any kind of medication. I didn't, you know, I just was still just running on Weider products. And I was getting, like, anxiety for the first time in my life. I didn't know what anxiety was, but, like, I couldn't feel my hands and stuff like that. You know what I mean? You know, I'd, like, be pinching myself. So anyway, I got out. I drank all the way, maybe didn't for an hour. Got off the plane in Tokyo, and I had the paper ticket back then, right? Like we all did. And I said, I'm not doing this, because I knew the schedule, which I got in advance. Garuda hour, Tenru hour, jumbo, three different cities, 3 days. I said, I'm not doing this. And I just walked across, and I'm in the Northwest Terminal. I said, when's the next flight back to the United States? And the guy said, Seattle's leaving in a half hour. I said, is there a first class seat? He said, yeah, I said, book me. He said, what about your luggage? I said, I'm leaving it here. Now I can hear Matoka, right? Bob's wife. They paid you when you landed. You were in Tokyo in the old days, right?
Yeah.
Great report, baggage claim, Matoka. So I just ignored it. I got in the plane, and man, I was so cracked, Steve. I sat down next to this guy, and I go, can I talk to you? I said, yeah. But about what? He said, well, I said, let's get a drink to start. I drank all the way to Seattle with him, and I had tears in my eyes telling him, I don't know how I'm wrecked. I'm going to get fired. My wife's going to hate me. I'm going to be the traitor for not showing up. So anyway, I got there and I slept all the way to Chicago. I slept Chicago, Charlotte. I got off the plane there with Crockett. I had to turn around, get back on the plane, fly all the way back to Tokyo. We got there in time because I would have had a day off right there. We landed, went right to the arena. I look at Dick Slater and I said, Dick, you know, if I die out here, you know, just tell my family I love them. Went out, broke a sweat, and hell, I went out and drank for 3 days. It was the thought of getting ragged out by Jumbo. I just hated it, right?
Yeah.
But here's the story. I got a Christmas card from that guy for 10 years. The first one said, I didn't know how famous you were when you were sitting with me. You've already done well for yourself. Another time I landed and we came back and I was with Arn and we were driving to Baltimore. And it used to be this place called the Safari Club at the Sheraton in Baltimore. We used to all hang out there and I said, Arn, goddamn it, I'm quitting. I'm going home. I'm quitting all this. He said, you stupid son of a bitch. Let's go get a sweat and get ready to get drunk tonight. He wouldn't even tolerate it. I said, I'm quitting. I'm going home. I'm tired. I can't do this every night. He said, well, you stupid. You know, I talk, you stupid son of a bitch. We're going to go out there and have it sold out. Do your shit and we're going to get drunk again. We did.
The Safari Club was pretty legendary.
That was a hell of a club, man.
That was a hell of a damn club. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember her name, but somehow I lost my Rolex watch with her. That's when I was an undertaker, son of a bitch.
Did you ever get it back?
No, I never got it back. What am I going to do, call the police? There were two girls in the room. Oh, by the way, honey, somebody stole my watch. These girls are in my room.
No, that's one of those ones. God dang, I can't believe I left my watch in the dressing room. I called the building, no one found it.
Yeah.
There's no mention of women.
I took my grandma one time in Chicago, and he brought some girls back that we met. Then Mike calls me the morning cousin. The girl stole his watch, his Rolex. I said, what are you blaming me for? He said, well, you took me to the next room. I said, I didn't make you take your watch, right? There's a wall between us, you know? I mean, that's the kind of heat I used to get. I would just take guys to a bar and their wife hated me. That's the job of the traveling woman.
Hey, didn't you lose the belt one time?
Yeah, I sure did. That's another chick. You know, I'm glad Wendy's gone. I can tell you this story. So, in 86, I met this girl. And I've been busted, so I've never told this on a podcast. This is great. So, I'm in Lincoln, Nebraska. Steve, this is a great story. I'm glad you asked me this. So, I'm in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I'm wrestling somebody from Harley's territory, snowstorm, right? So they want me to drive back to Kansas City. I said, no. I said, is there a good hotel? I said, yeah, the Hilton, So I go into the Hilton Hotel, and there's this drop-dead blonde, drop-dead bartender, right, named Jana. I won't give out her last name. So so I'm sitting there with a guy from the Sports Illustrated, right, who's there writing an article because Oklahoma was ranked number one that year, and Nebraska was ranked number two. Lincoln is where the university is, right? So we're talking football, I'm having a hell of a time. But this chick goes over and starts playing the piano. And man, I dogged her all night long. So finally, you know, I got her downstairs a little bit, and then she, you know, delayed the action. And then, so nothing happened, but I couldn't get her off my mind. So I called her and I said, look, here's the deal. If Oklahoma beats Nebraska, and this is back when Barry was coaching, right?
Barry Switzer.
I said, if Oklahoma wins, and then you come to Atlanta for Starrcade, which was the next weekend. So, Oklahoma won, and so I bought her a ticket, man. I'm excited. And then we went there, and I wrestled Nikita and Neomni and back out to the Marriott. You know, the stories of that Marriott and Riverdale Road are legendary. Good Lord. So... Just a side note, I saw someone that used to work there a couple weeks ago. She looked at me and she said, I heard you almost died. I can't believe you're still alive. I said, well, I had a problem back then. I've resolved those issues now. So anyway, the chick came. So I ended up having a full-scale, you know, run with her. I mean, I was doing stuff like I had to go to Hawaii for the night. This is back traveling, right? And I would fly her from Lincoln to meet me in Miami to fly to Hawaii for one shot for Leah. And we'd go to Nick's Cafe and I'd fly her back. And then I took her to San Juan and I told her to walk on the plane in the kayfabe, everybody. And I sit down, we're going to the NWA convention and my wife was sick and sitting on the plane and I introduced her to everybody. Is that, no, and I said, I just sat down next to a stranger, right? So Dusty and Michelle were on the plane, and Dusty was sat there and told me something, what's going on. I said, I know the chicks you're looking at. So anyway, I got busted, but I never admitted to it. So getting back to the belt. As a matter of fact, so I years later, she shows up in San Antonio at the matches, and she was with a friend. So it's smart move on his part. I think to myself, I'm going to get over with Vince, right? So I go over to knock on Vince's trailer, and I said, hey, man, I know that, you know, I'm not saying that you would do this, but I got friends there tonight. Might want to have a drink later on. Well, he blew me off. But that was the night. Do you remember hearing the story about the Road Warriors clotheslining him and all that in San Antonio in the bar?
No.
That night we all got with Undertaker and that. You don't remember hearing about that? He came out that night and drank, but I went off the other way, the other direction. No, he blew me off. But so about, oh God, 5 years later, I'm in Houston one night and she shows up. This is the belt story. So, I mean, I've never gotten over it. She was what, you would call the greatest verbal masseuse of all time. this is going to be a good podcast. That's what I called her. Where's our verbal masseuse? When she's showing up again. Arnold, if you buy that son of a bitch another pair of tennis shoes, I'll never talk to you again. She always came to the town with no tennis shoes. So anyway, we go down to a club, me and Barry and her and a couple girls. And so I met somebody else. I put my bag with the belt in her car. This is now back. This is WCW now. This is the belt, the new belt, not the NWA belt. Whole new different time frame, right? And she got pissed off because I wouldn't do something and she drove off with the belt. So, yeah. So we're off the next day, but I got to be at TV in Montgomery, Alabama. And so, brother, I called everybody but the FBI to find her, because I didn't get her. I didn't even get her number. She just showed up at the old Sam Houston, and I got in the car with her. And then I got down to this club and started talking to somebody else. And, man, she got pissed and left. So, and I've never seen her since, but I tracked her down, and I can't remember how I was. And I went to the police. Well, I get a call from her, and he said, "I heard you lost the belt." What are you talking about? I said, "I'll be in Montgomery. I'll have the belt." And sure enough, Herd was in Montgomery. And I walked in the building, and I had just gotten it an hour before. And Terry Taylor said, Terry was buzzing me and said, "Hey, he's pissed. He thinks he got you." I said, "Well, fuck him. I got it." So, F him. I got it. Anyway, that's just one of my exciting stories.
But you got that original belt back?
Well, but at this time, though, when I first met her, I was just the NWA champion with the NWA belt. At this time, you know, 10, 15 years later, when she came to see me at Sam Houston, I had the new WCW belt.
Yeah, but you got that belt back.
I got it back, yeah, but she drove out of the parking lot with it in her car. I didn't have her number. I had her name and all that, but I had to spend some money to get that sucker back.
Yeah,
mad.
But you know there's no worse feeling in the world, first of all, because someone was stealing the belt. But there's been many times when I'd be driving down the road, and I remember packing up the belt inside of my suitcase, putting it in my trunk.
Yeah.
But because of the night's events before, all of a sudden you just have that panic feeling like, holy shit, did I pack the
belt?
I know,
brother.
So you pull over on the shoulder of the road, you get back in your truck, you open up your bag, like, oh, yeah, there it is. So then you fold up your shit, you lock the trunk, and you haul ass again. But I can only imagine the feeling when someone else has got it, much less when I thought I had misplaced it.
Well, here's the deal. She didn't know she had the belt. She was just mad.
Oh, it wasn't malicious. She just took off.
No, I don't think she was malicious at all, because she gave it up once I found her. It was just, I didn't know how to find her. No, I just think she was mad. It was a woman deal, you know, because I was talking to somebody else. Actually, it was Wahoo's daughter. So I was just catching up from the old days. And she got pissed and walked off. When I found her, she gave it right up. But I've never heard or talked to her since, so... I should have realized, I'm going to say this, hope she hears this, that when her dad tried to borrow $25,000 from me, that I was probably in the wrong direction. Sit down at a family dinner. Yeah, okay. Have you ever thought about investing in agriculture? Can I have $25,000? Yeah. I'll write you the check when I get back home.
You mentioned earlier you were over at a Comic-Con over in Cherry Hill, New Jersey earlier. I just got finished doing a Comic-Con over in Silicon Valley. Where can people find you next? And what are you up to? And where can they find you on Twitter? Or what's your next project?
Well, speaking of Houston, I'm throwing the pitch out Wednesday.
Oh, really?
For the Astros. Yeah, I've become very close to Josh Reddick. He's a Georgia guy. That's why we got to get you up here for the Notre Dame game. So, Josh is a big fan, and I stay in touch with him, and he went to Georgia, so we got the football thing in common because of my stepdaughter. And, of course, you know, you talked to Herschel the other day. I'm close to Herschel. I'm working, let me think, this coming, I've got an appearance Saturday in Greenville, South Carolina. Then Labor Day weekend, I'm doing the Indianapolis Comic Con, and I hosted an event at the Indy 500 3 years ago. And I love Indianapolis. It's a great town. And actually got recruited by Indiana out of high school. I took her on a trip up there on a visit. And Indianapolis is a great town. I mean, that Indy 500, it's just 300,000 people come to that race, Steve. You've ever seen it?
No, but I've heard it was just something you must do once in a lifetime.
Yeah, it's 300,000 people, and they have this thing called the snake pit, which starts before the race, and everybody's drinking. It's like a tailgate deal, right? So I hosted that with this disc jockey, the big-time entertainer called Marshmallow. Do you know who he is?
Yep.
Yeah. And we had a ball, and Wendy and I just had a good time. And so I love Indy, and I've done signs there, and St. Elmo's, the restaurant's fabulous. And then I'm doing, coming out to L.A., I'm hoping to see you. I'm doing a commercial for the company. And then they're going to cast me maybe in a part with WWE Studios. So I'm really looking forward to that. They called me, the people that are work for WWE Studio out there, probably people you know. So
if you come to LA and don't give me a call, I'll be pissed.
Well, you know I'm going to call you. It's just if you can get a pass to come out. You know,
oh, I can get a pass to get out. I always got an ace up my sleeve. I never try to pull that card out, but if you're coming into town, I'll pull that card.
Well, listen, I tried to get you over there that last time, man, and you were like, Dodge, man, I didn't want to say anything, but, you know, I tried to get you to come over to the hotel. We missed each other. I said, can't we do a podcast right at the bar here? Hey, listen. Listen, anytime I can see Steve Austin, brother, I'm going to tell him, I don't care what the doctor is telling me, I'm going to have some drinks. What a way to go. Hey, listen. Now the motto is, I want to die either on top of Wendy in the ring. Now it's with the boys or doing your podcast. Four ways to go by the niche boy.
Hey, man, it's been good talking to you, and I look forward to seeing you again.
Well, I'll see you the third.
I'll be there.
Pencil that in, and don't tell me you're going to go out to the ranch on me, or I'll just get on a private plane and fly over to Tahoe and find you.
I'll be there on the third.
All right, sir. Love you, Steve.
Love you, too. Hey, let's give big ups to TrueCar for being a loyal sponsor of the Steve Austin Show. Well, TrueCar, 60 seconds is all you'll need to get an offer for your car. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, or do a few push-ups, you can get a TrueCash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or even from your home. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate TrueCash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out with you. Together, you can ask questions and get the answers you need so there's no surprises. Then, simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. TrueCash offer not available in all areas. All right, everybody, give it a go home. Q, I'm wrap up this podcast and ride off in sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank my guest, my special guest, the greatest of all time, Nature Boy Ric Flair, for taking an hour and a half out of his day to talk to me on Skype for my podcast. Appreciate it, Rick, and I look forward to seeing you soon. One thing before I forget it. I recently was in New York City, and I did Hot Ones with Sean Evans, where you sit there and eat a bunch of hot wings and tell stories as he interviews you. Hey, man, I think it's up to about 8 million views. So if you haven't seen it or if you haven't heard of it, go to YouTube and type in Hot Ones, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and give this thing a look. I'd like to drive the viewership up, so hopefully it will help promote Straight Up Steve Austin. And the guy does great interviews, a very well-spoken guy, very well-researched guy, and just a pleasure to hang out with him and eat a bunch of hot stuff. So check that out on YouTube if you haven't already. One announcement I'd like to make real quick. Everybody's been asking me, Steve, when are you going to come out with some brand new t-shirt designs? It's been forever. Well, I'm here to announce right now, ProWrestlingTees.com has some Broken Skull Ranch shirts, but I'm here to announce my brand new line of t-shirts, which I'm very proud of, called Steve Austin's King of Attitude. Check out these badass shirts on ProWrestlingTees.com. Shirts will be available next Monday on the 26th as we head into the Labor Day sale, which everything will be 20% off. This will be the chance to jump on some of the most badass shirt designs you will ever see, capturing the King of Attitude in an era which was the most competitive and most profitable in the history of the professional wrestling business. Check out Steve Austin's King of Attitude series on ProWrestlingTees.com. And that's the bottom line. And don't forget to set your DVRs for Straight Up Steve Austin. Baker Mayfield is my guest next week. After that, the man, Becky Lynch, makes an appearance. WWE superstar and a trailblazer for the women's division over there for WWE, and I had a blast hanging out with both of these people, and I had a blast hanging out with Sal Vulcano. Hey, don't forget to rate and review the Steve Austin Show on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends to check us out. If you want to reach me here on the podcast, send an email to questions@steveaustinshow.com, and the best damn IPA on the planet is Broken Skull IPA from El Segundo Brewing Company. All over the Southern California area, Whole Foods Total Wines. If you're not in Cali, you might be SOL. I got some badass pocket knives as well, the Broken Skull and a Working Man from Cold Steel Knives. Go to my new Amazon store, amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin, or go directly to coldsteelknives.com. Folks, I am on social media, Twitter and Instagram, @SteveAustinBSR. And if you see me out in the woods, you can guarantee you'll see me riding, proudly, a Kawasaki. I want to say thank you one more time to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially TrueCar, Geico, Trojan, BioWave, BetOnline.ag, and the NHTSA. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. If you need more info on my sponsors, check out the show description to this episode for details. Until next time, folks, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.